turkey for me. Turkey for you. Let's eat the turkey in my big brown shoe. Love to eat the turkey at the table. I once saw a movie with Betty Grable. Eat that turkey all night long. 50 million Elvis fans can't be
You gotta
wrong.
Give Gary credit for finding really good theme songs. Turkey, lurkey,
Did you guys see that 7 dairy farms in the Southeast Valley may be shortly moving out? Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I think, you know, ultimately with the population growth, there's only so long the dairy farm could last in a populated area. And none of us ever like to see that. But we don't get to see stories like this very often. New owner turning former golf course into a ranch.
I love that.
The Rio Rico Golf Club, you'd mentioned Rio Rico, mm-hmm. your packing plant. Yeah. Well, the golf club down there is being redeveloped as a ranch, according to property Jackson. Get property owner, get this, American name, Andrew Jackson.
Oh, I like that story. You know, in this third segment, we thought we'd ask Selwyn about, you know, what it takes for a farm to open to the public.
Yeah, so it's an interesting question, and it's one that I probably didn't really consider as much as I should have when I went into it. And I really enjoy it, but you want to talk about a different skill set altogether. I enjoy quiet mornings in the orchard, and even the hard late hours. You know, there's a certain amount of stoicism and pride that you can take, you know, in the struggle of the American farmer. To do that and then immediately turn on the charisma at 9 o'clock in the morning when we open up our gates was a hurdle I had to learn how to overcome. And you know, but as much of a struggle as I kind of felt like that was up front, what a repayment on that investment I've gotten. We have a really great group of people that's always growing, that come out there and support us and take care of our farm family out there. And it's really amazing. And so many people, much to the chagrin of the guys that helped me run that, are willing to stop and spend 15, 20 minutes having a conversation about Arizona agriculture with me, and gives me a great chance to be an advocate, for the industry and for our way of life out there. And so that's really neat. They would prefer that I stay behind the table and sell fruit, but it's really wonderful. And we've got a group of people that are out there advocating for us all the time and talk about how wonderful an experience it is. It's been great, but it is a different skill set altogether. Yeah.
And certainly that whole customer focus and customer orientation. But what I'm excited about is knowing how much heart and sweat and everything else that was put into that experiment farm to, you know, develop these best practices and also discover that some of the things that citrus farmers were already doing were, you know, they were the right thing. So, and now we can actually take this wonderful fruit and somebody can be picking it for you, because it, when you go onto your property, this you pick farm, it's big and it's kind of overwhelming. So by the time you're done with the season, you may not be picked clean, but are they doing a pretty good job helping you pick the crops?
Yeah, we've always got room for more people in the orchard, don't get me wrong. But yeah, there's a lot of that stuff. It's not hard to tell what people like, I'll tell you that. There's a lot of stuff that we wind up with that just a few months into the season already, that stuff's starting to go. And so it's kind of a fun little a bit of market research even, I think, to kind of see what bears out. But and of the stuff that we have left over at the end of the season, you know, I get phone calls from some of our customers because they know that the fruit lasts past April. I get calls from my customers asking, well, you know, I know you're going to be out there tomorrow morning. Do you mind if I swing by and grab an extra bag or do that kind of thing? And just a shout out to a guy named Paris Masick. He runs an occupational therapy program for adults with special needs that does gleaning in orchards like
ours.
So at the end of the commercial season, if we have anything left over, they come out, they pick it, they donate that fruit, and those guys get a chance to actually get out and do some work and take care of themselves, which is pretty cool.
You know, we're talking about turkeys and stuffing and recipes, and I've discovered you like to cook, and you guys like to have big dinners and kind of just open them up to close family and friends. And so have you guys ever thought of doing like a dinner on the farm at the U-Pick? Or like there's a lot of those, you know, out in the field kind of dinners that are really inspiring and they really produce some very neat dinners.
Yeah, I've had some conversations with our friends at the local First Arizona about doing that kind of stuff. They really enjoy kind of having that urban-rural interaction that happens, and we've certainly thought about that. I'm not skilled enough in that department to pull off something like that. But if we get the right group of people together, I'd be more than happy to try to give that a shot.
That's neat. Yeah. What's the biggest surprise? What has been the biggest surprise to you about opening to the public?
You know, the amount of interest that people of all ages have in agriculture, a lot of that still remains a mystery for a lot of people, and it's one that they really want to investigate. And when they come out there, they've got all kinds of questions. And thanks to the Farm Bureau, I have been primed with all kinds of responses. But because of my opportunity to interact with so many different segments and sectors in agriculture, I either have answers to those questions or I have people that these guys can reach out to and get answers. And just that curiosity about the whole process on behalf of so many people, young and old alike.
And the neat thing, too, is on fillyourplate.org, you can search for other farms that you can go visit. So it's not just Justice Brothers U-Pick. If you're down in Cochise County, the Wilcox area, there's a handful of farms that you can go visit there, Apple Annie's and a few others. So there's all sorts of places you can go to get on the farm to learn about Arizona agriculture here in Arizona, like Selwyn was just speaking to.
You had mentioned just the troubles and trials of being a farmer. JFK's quote, that always rings a bell in my mind. Do you know it?
I'm familiar with the quote. Yeah.
The farmer is the only man in our economy who buys everything at retail, sells everything at wholesales, and pays freight both ways.
That's right.
Yeah, it's pretty true. Makes you wonder why we stay in it. Although mom and dad retired from it. Yeah. So. And therefore, kids didn't take it on. We apologize to the public, but I know you still love us anyway. I'm still promoting Arizona agriculture, a $23 billion industry here in Arizona.
Now, even though Thanksgiving was originally celebrated back in 76 with George Washington, it did not become a national holiday until 1941.
I know. And when I did research on this to put that article together, which, by the way, for the listening public, it's up on AZFB or Arizona Farm Bureau's website, just do a search on turkeys and it'll pop up. But I was kind of surprised at how many iterations it had to go through. We kind of give Abraham Lincoln credit for really bringing it forth, but there were a handful and maybe more of proclamations from our presidents, but it truly took an act of Congress. And there was a time, this is the thing that I thought was most fascinating, there was a time when Americans were celebrating Thanksgiving on two different occasions within November because there was a contingency that still liked it at like the fourth Thursday of the month, but another contingency that wanted it earlier. So it went back and forth. So for once, Congress was really doing some work, and they got us. They enacted a very good policy for us to have an annual Thanksgiving and celebration of this great country, the abundance of it, and certainly our farmers and ranchers. So it's been kind of fun to do the research on this. And we should all really celebrate it with some local turkeys, and you can get those at Mortimer Family Farms. I think some of our other local farms also will sell to you, but if you want to get a local turkey, you better put your orders in early.
And I didn't realize that they were in the same family as pheasant.
I didn't either. I'm telling you, when you do this research, you find all interest, a whole bunch of trivia about Thanksgiving.
Well, we all have heard the story about Christopher Columbus and thinking, you know, when he landed, he was in India and then therefore called the native people Indians. Well, he also thought the wild turkey were peacocks.
Yes.
He apparently had never seen a turkey or a peacock. They didn't have picture books and online encyclopedias back in the 16.
I think when he landed, he saw a lot of brand new things. That's what made those explorers, bold explorers back in those days, amazing.
I said 16, no, it was 14. It was 1600s, the Pilgrims.
Yes.
And the Indians had their first 3-day celebration, 1621. Wow.
Yeah. So there's some history there for sure.
And they don't know that turkey was eaten at that event. No. They know for sure they had deer, duck, geese, oysters, lobster, eel.
I know.
And fish.
Well, a lot of, you can tell that they were close to the ocean because a lot of those, and then definitely some game. So, and we shouldn't be surprised, but it's interesting to see what their menu was that first Thanksgiving.
And it's interesting to think about what they didn't have. Milk, cheese, bread, butter, no mashed potatoes, no pumpkin pie.
Another thing that is, speaking of how we eat it today, and I researched this in more than one place, apparently the average American on Thanksgiving Day consumes at least 4,000 calories.
I doubt the first Thanksgiving had that many calories.
Yeah. Especially and, without the milk and cheese.
And they burned a lot more calories making that food than we'll burn making our Thanksgiving.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was pretty interesting times. And again, all of our listeners, they can go to fillyourplate.org for a variety of recipes. They're all searchable. And we've devoted an entire category to Thanksgiving recipes. And for any of my farmers and ranchers that are listening, I've already commissioned Selwyn to give me his marinade for turkey. If you have any special recipes, especially if they're kind of unique, send them my way, because we'll put them up on Fill Your Plate. And the other neat thing with our recipes, we give credit where credit's due. We'll highlight the farmer or rancher that submitted that recipe. We've got some family recipes with our farm and ranch families that go back generations, just like the generations of farming and ranching that they've done. So that's what makes our recipes a little bit more unique. They're actually from our farmers and ranchers.
When it comes to cooking turkey, I'm sold on brining because it's so easy.
Mm-hmm.
So you pick your favorite brine, you spice it up, season it up any way you want. I've never tried citrus, though. That's going to be probably this year.
We'll swing by.
Okay.
We'll get you some.
Deal.
Yeah. Yep. That's fun.
Yeah, we had a really great resource when I was coming up, because there was a lot of farm families that attended. They'd go to church together, and then the churches would put together a holiday recipe book.
Yeah.
And then they'd sell them to, for a fundraiser for different projects and that kind of stuff. And I've got just a whole host of these local that just they're church cookbooks, but they happen to be a lot of farm family recipes, because back then that was kind of that's who populated that area. So incidentally, I have one of my favorite enchilada recipes, shredded beef recipes, actually comes from a Japanese farm family in the West Valley. So.
Oh, cool. And the Casa Grande Valley Cotton Women, when they existed, obviously they were promoting cotton in the valley and throughout the state of Arizona. They put together a cookbook. And I still, to this day, and that it came out like I think in the 80s. To this day, I still get calls from people. The only reason they call me is because they know that the Murphy family's been in the cotton industry forever. They'll call me and they'll say, Julie, I need to get my hands on that Casa Grande Valley Cotton cookbook and I can't find it. Do you have any sources for it? Unfortunately, it's out of print, but a handful of those recipes from that cookbook are on Fill Your Plate. And that's one of the things that's, to your point, Selwyn, has been pretty special, is these farm families sharing their recipes, coming together and cooking as a family, so to speak.